Okay, well, welcome everybody. We're happy to have you here today for the Nature of Breastfeeding Workshop. This is a workshop for community health workers and others who work with families and communities. And I'm your host, Ann Gainey, and I'm from the Minnesota Community Health Worker Alliance, and I'm going to admit one person here. Okay, so this workshop is one of four free workshops brought to you by the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition, in partnership with the Minnesota Community Health Worker Alliance. And we're really excited about this partnership and the opportunity to work together to bring you these workshops. So before we get started, just a couple housekeeping details. So first, you will get the email addresses or the website addresses for the two organizations, and there are great things on those websites, so we want you to look at them. There are tools on the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition website and a lot of information for CHWs on the Alliance website. I'd like to introduce Linda Kopecky, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition, to tell you about a special workshop.
Hi everybody, this is Linda Kopecky with the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition. We've been around for about 15 years, and we're a group of coalitions, so local coalitions, regional breastfeeding coalitions, and cultural breastfeeding coalitions, so that includes the Indigenous Breastfeeding Coalition and the Hmong Breastfeeding Coalition in Minnesota, and we work to promote, support, and protect breastfeeding across the state. So we're hosting a workshop coming up on Saturday, August 8th. This is a 6-hour workshop. It's 3 hours and then a 2-hour break and then another 3 hours. And it's called Baby Behavior. So it's really learning about the language of infants and the language of toddlers for parents and caregivers to be more responsive and also to do more responsive feeding. So we know that that improves breastfeeding when parents can understand how their baby and toddlers are talking to them and communicating with them and what they're telling them about their needs. I'm going to put the link for that workshop, for registering for that workshop. It's free. I'm going to put that in the chat section. But if you want more information about anything that the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition offers, please go to our website. Thanks.
So we will get you the website addresses along with the PowerPoint from this presentation. And there's a wealth of information on both of those. We're also recording this, and so it will be posted on each of the websites. So you will be able to see it again if you want or tell other people about it. So as we get started, here are a few Zoom details. Please keep yourself on mute during the presentation, but feel free to use the chat box to ask questions and we'll monitor those. We will have a time for questions and answers at the end as well. If you have problems with bandwidth, if your screen is freezing up or you seem to be having trouble with the internet, it can help to turn off your video because that lowers the amount of bandwidth you need. And you may want to put your setting on side by side. This means that you would see both the presentation, the PowerPoint, and the picture of the person speaking. And to do that, you go to the little video camera at the bottom of your screen and click on the little up arrow next to it. Then you go to video settings, and then share screen, and then side by side. And I'll put that in the chat box too so that you can see it as we're going. So let me introduce our speakers. We have two wonderful speakers today. You have a treat in store because I've heard them practicing and I've been learning as they practice. They have a wealth of wisdom and passion to share with you. Ann Oswood has been a nurse midwife for 26 years and doing outpatient clinical lactation visits for about 10 years. She earned her certification as an international board certified lactation consultant 2 years ago. And she works for M Health Fairview in the East region, what used to be known as Health East, at the Woodbury and Mapleton clinics, providing outpatient lactation visits to family who need breastfeeding support. She's an at-large board member of the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition, and she has successfully breastfed and raised 3 children who are now 24, 22, and 17. Ann says, "I love my work, and it shows. You'll see that." And then we have Fua Chua Kang, who identifies as being part of the 1.5 Hmong American generation. She considers herself an expert in navigating cultural clashes like, how do you interpret family in Hmong and in English? She has been a community health worker what seems like her whole life, and she can speak fluent Hmonglish in both green and white Hmong dialects. She is a proud mom of 3 boys, also an expert in navigating parenthood, and she has worked in the healthcare industry for 13 years before moving into the human social services sector. She's now the director of health and wellness at the Hmong American Partnership, and she completed her Bachelor's of Art with a concentration in community health and program evaluation from Metro State University, and received her Master's of Business Administration from the University of St. Thomas. So you have great speakers. Welcome, Anne and Fua, and I'm going to turn this over to you to take away.
Thanks very much, Anne.
All right.
Well, we're excited to be here, folks, to talk with you about breastfeeding today. We're here with some information that we hope is going to be useful to you as you help breastfeeding families, and we hope to give you some practical takeaways as we kind of go through some basics and as Fua and I just kind of have a conversation with each other and with you about breastfeeding.
And here comes the...
I just want to welcome everybody, all my CHWs on here, and those who are work in the capacity of a navigator or liaison to communities. What I'm trying to help out with today's session is just from a CHW's perspective, how do we encourage breastfeeding? And just to learn about the basics of breastfeeding so that we can put that in our toolkit as we're out and about seeing our patients in their homes or in the clinics or whatever setting that we will be in that capacity.
So here we just have a couple of objectives. We hope that by the end of the presentation that this will be valuable to you in that you feel like you can build parents' self-efficacy and self-advocacy around breastfeeding, that you and you can help the families that you serve know the difference between what is normal and what isn't normal in breastfeeding and early breastfeeding especially, and that we're able to give you some tools and resources to use when you're helping your families with breastfeeding. So that's that first one. And first of all, we just want you to understand that there are a lot of good things about breastfeeding. Many women who choose to breastfeed do that because they know that there are valuable things about breastfeeding, especially for the baby. And that's women who choose to breastfeed often do that because they know that it's good for baby. What we're going to try to offer you is a kind of a practical takeaway for all of the points that we're giving you for each slide, for each topic, that there's something practical that you can really take into your practice as you work with families. And for this one, it's that there really truly is a difference between breast milk and formula. And it really does make a difference for babies and mothers in their long-term health. Who receive breast milk have a lower risk of respiratory and GI infections. They have a lower risk of asthma and obesity, and also actually SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, is less in babies who are breastfed. It also gives lifelong protection, like I said, against things like asthma and obesity. It's also easier in the long term. Lots of times the early weeks might have some challenges, but we're going to talk about ways you can get help for that. But over the long term, it is easier than getting up in the middle of the night, fixing bottles, warming them up, preparing formula, all of those kinds of things. If you can just bring baby to the breast, feed them, and be done, it is easier. Breast milk is easier to digest for babies. People may notice that sometimes their babies wake up a little bit more when they are breastfed than when they're given formula. Not always, although you may hear people say that. And that's actually because breast milk is harder to digest. It's not that it's more satisfying, it's that it's harder for babies to digest and takes longer. So breast milk is easier to digest than formula is. And also there are a lot of advantages to breastfeeding that women may not know, in that it's good for them as well as for the baby. It reduces their long-term health risks of high blood pressure, breast cancer, and ovarian cancer for the woman over her lifetime. And it also can reduce her risk of high blood pressure and also reduces postpartum depression. And that, many people are surprised by that. They feel like, well, it's mothers get more tired, they get more depressed. It actually will help with postpartum depression. So there are a lot of important things that are good in the long term with breastfeeding, not to help force anybody to change their mind, but I know that community health workers, I have learned from Fua in my learnings from her, that CHWs are really about health prevention. And breastfeeding is really one of the earliest health prevention measures that we have. So that's one of our first main takeaways, is that breastfeeding really is different than formula, and it offers long-term health prevention benefits for families.
And I think as a community health worker, we go out into the field just talking about how do you prevent high blood pressure or postpartum depression, but not realizing that the actions that you can do is making the decision to breastfeed is the long-term benefits of that. And so when women who have given birth in the hospital discharge, they have discharge instructions. And usually in the discharge instructions, it gives you, you know, what to look out for. But this is just a great opportunity during this webinar for our CHWs to just know, like, oh, in addition to the discharge instructions, long-term benefits of breastfeeding is to help reduce, you know, blood pressure, lower risk of getting postpartum depression, lower risk of breast cancer and ovarian cancer. And so those are some main points if you're only working with the mom. And then as Anne highlighted, the benefits of with baby as well. Thanks, Anne.
Yeah.
Should we go to the next slide?
Yes. Yep.
I think that's on. Thanks, Anne Ganey.
Yeah.
Breastfeeding, y'all, is a right. You have a right to breastfeed, just like the First Amendment. You have the right to free speech. And, you know, I'm on this Facebook group called Mama's Life, and they talk a lot about, like, how do you be more decent in public without showing your breasts, without showing the nipple, and still breastfeed safely? Well, just the foundation of breastfeeding is that you have the right to breastfeed. In the state of Minnesota, and there are some statutes attached to this, there's two laws to that right. In the statute number one, it states that moms has the right to feed anywhere in a private public location. And it says where the mother and child otherwise authorized to be. So unless you're going in a place that's private and they're not allowing you in, mothers have the right to feed anywhere, because just like you eating food, babies have the right to eat and to feed whenever they need it. And breastfeeding is part of that. Part of that statute or law number two is that employers have to accommodate nursing mothers. And there's some more language in there, but the gist of it is employers have to accommodate mothers who are breastfeeding. And that also means pumping breast milk. And they have to allow the mothers during the breaks that are allowed, whatever that looks like in a company or an agency or organization, to let them be in this a place where it affords them the privacy to be able to do to breast pump. So we'll add the legislation language or the links to this and as part of the PowerPoints. But those are two things that I'd like for you all to build your base on. It's just that breastfeeding is a right for all mothers.
If a woman has questions about how to breastfeed in a discreet way, do you have any suggestions that you give her?
I'm a little bit more straightforward. So it's your baby's source of food. And if you don't want to be decent, that's totally okay. You know, breast exposure when you're feeding is totally okay. This law protects you, okay? Mm-hmm. Whether they see the nipple or not, it protects you as a feeding, as a mother who's breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Other tips, you know, I've heard from other mothers. I breastfed all three of my boys, and I'm more of the, you know, kind of like transparent, like this is what they're getting because this is my child's food. Yep. Other mothers have bought like these shawls that are light and baby can breathe, or shirts that are a little bit bigger. But I think it's up to the comfort of the mother who is breastfeeding to say, you know what, if he's hungry or she's hungry and I have to feed, then it's okay to expose your breast in mm-hmm. public to breastfeed. So I hope I answer that, because you can cover up, but you don't need to.
Right. Yep. And also when there's, when a mother's breastfeeding, the baby is actually covering the nipple by eating. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
and it doesn't violate the indecency law at all when you breastfeed. So that's also tip number three in your toolbox, that it doesn't violate any laws about indecent exposure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Great, thanks. Okay, another thing that is really important to know, this is kind of, there's some small pictures and stuff on this slide, but is how milk is made. And milk is made in the breast starting really early on in the pregnancy. In early pregnancy, women also often feel their breasts tender and starting to grow. And that is a sign in the early pregnancy that the breasts are already doing the work that they need to do to make the milk. So very early in pregnancy, if you are dealing with women who are very early, you can already encourage them. This is already happening. The milk is already starting to, the work is already done, being done to make milk for your baby. The glands and ducts are growing to make the milk. And by the mid-pregnancy, the breasts already have colostrum in them, which is the first milk to feed the baby. That's already there by the fourth or fifth month. When the baby is born, I stepped ahead. For the first, that colostrum that is there is different than the mature milk that comes in later. For the first few days after the baby is born, the baby will be drinking the colostrum that has been waiting for them. It's different than the mature milk in that it's thicker, it's kind of like thin honey, and it's stronger with more nutrients in it. There isn't as much of it, but it's designed that way. Baby's stomach is very small. It can't handle a lot. And the colostrum is extra strong to allow for that. A baby's stomach is about the size of a big marble, a shooter marble, if there's anybody here who remembers what that looks like. And I have one. If you're looking at this later, you won't be able to see this. But this is about the size of a baby's stomach on like the third day of life.
It's like a half dollar?
Like a half dollar, even a little bit smaller than that. Yes, okay. It's small. So I tell new mothers, that's all you have to be able to do in these first few days. That's it. You know, that's not a lot. You can do that.
The baby, the colostrum is thicker. Like, what kind of consistency should the moms be looking for? So if, let's say, CHW is dispatched out to see mom after discharge, and yeah, mom's saying, I breastfed, but there are these, you know, white stuff. I don't know what they are. Consistency. So the CHW could, you know, maybe walk through and process with the patient on how to refer to the specialist or not.
Yeah. In somewhere in that first, like from birth until somewhere between 3 and 5 days, what the mother will see is just some drops of kind of like a yellowish, like thin honey, kind of.
Okay.
That's kind of what it's like. It's a little bit sticky. And if the mother uses a breast pump, she won't see very much coming, which can kind of be discouraging, like, oh, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. But there is. This colostrum is enough for the baby. But that's kind of what it looks like.
Okay.
And it's very important and really strong. And in fact, I recently learned when I enjoy watching the vet shows that are on, if anybody watches those on cable on like Friday or Saturday nights, I recently learned that when a mother animal can't feed her baby animal because the mother cow has died or the goat mother doesn't understand how to take care of her baby or something like this, apparently this happens, that the vets carry around purchased animal colostrum, cow colostrum, goat colostrum, whatever sort of animal colostrum, so that they can feed this to the babies if the baby animal isn't able to nurse from the mother in the first couple of days, because they know this colostrum is so important for newborn animals. So because it has such strength and is able to protect the babies from infection and things like that. And I thought, oh, wow, we're telling mothers this all the time, and the vets know this and carry this around. So I thought that was pretty cool. So anyway, in the first days, this is what's there, and this is really important, even though there's not very much. So it's important to tell mothers that even though there isn't like 2 ounces of milk coming from their breast, this is normal, and what's there is really important for the baby. When the baby is born, this is what starts to hormonally switch the body from pregnant mode to feeding mode. That's the hormonal switch that happens. And then as the mother starts to feed the baby and a few days pass, the breasts start to fill with the mature milk. They feel fuller, they feel firmer. Sometimes it's painful as the mature milk starts to come in. And all of this happens automatically. The woman's body is made to do this, and there's nothing that she needs to do to make the milk come in. It just happens by itself, which is
whether so you're saying whether you choose to breastfeed or not, every woman who has given birth, breast milk comes in naturally.
That is correct. Okay. There's nothing that she needs to do to make that happen.
That's also really good to keep in mind. As I'm a CHW and working with mothers and children through our WIC clinic, a lot of them opt out of breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Well, the ones who opt out of breastfeeding, a lot of them do breastfeed. They go with formula, but they're still having a lot of pain when the milk comes in. And so we have lactation consultants or mentors through the WIC clinic too, where we can still, you know, bridge that and say, hey, this mom who's not breastfeeding is having pain in the breasts. Do you, as a lactation consult with women who don't breastfeed but have issues with milk coming in and things like that too? Can we reach out to you as the lactation consultant over at the hospital?
Yes, because women do sometimes have milk come in. Well, all women have milk come in when their baby is born. And if they are not planning to breastfeed, the best thing to do is to just leave their breasts alone.
Okay.
Not try to bring the milk out. Because one of the things I'm going to say next is the best way to get the most amount of milk to come is to get the milk out of the breast to feed the baby and to bring the milk out. So if the woman does not want to give her baby breast milk, she should not try to get the milk out of her breast. But yes, if women are having concerns about that, then they can certainly call us. Yes.
Thank you, Anne.
So all of this will happen without the woman doing anything. And this is the main takeaway for this this little bit, is that there's nothing the lady needs to do to make this happen. And just a week or so ago, I saw a woman in the outpatient breastfeeding clinic, a young woman. She was about 22. And we were working with her to, she was having some pain, and I was talking with her about that. And she told me as we were having this conversation, she said, well, I never really planned to breastfeed. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, what? I said, well, I saw my baby, which was about the sweetest thing I ever heard. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what? So then you decided to breastfeed? And she said, yes, I did. And she had to be separated from her baby because her baby had some health problems at the beginning, and the baby had to be in the intensive care. And she said, no, I thought, well, I might as well try. They gave her a breast pump to start removing milk from her breast to encourage the milk to come more. And she said, well, I don't think anything's really going to happen. But then about 3 days later, she said, but then there it was. I had all this milk. My breasts were just full of milk. And so I thought, well, I might as well go ahead.
You might as well.
I might as well try. And she was really, really pleased. And her baby was able to nurse and to be able to be at the breast. And so it was just really a beautiful story from this young lady. Because so she was like, wasn't planning to breastfeed, but then she realized, oh, this just happens by itself. The milk just comes by itself, which is great.
In preparation, we help our patients navigate through their maternity, right? When they're pregnant, usually I'm connected with women who are diagnosed with gestational diabetes, but I still walk them through like a checklist of things as a CHW, like, do you have a crib ready? You know, do you have a system in place of who's going to watch the other kids when you're in the hospital? Is your husband there? Will be there? And one of them is about, you know, breastfeeding and formula feeding. And some of the answers are, I don't know. Most of the time is, I don't know. And so as a CHW, I'm going, so how do I prepare moms when they get discharged? And especially for moms who are diagnosed with gestational diabetes. And they're like, well, should I eat the same? Should I eat more? And so that's a question for moms. But to your point, a lot of our moms don't ever plan to breastfeed. Those who know, majority of the time are either defaulting to formula feed because it's scary to think about breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a first time mom or first time breastfeeding mom. So I was just wanting to just bring that story to light to say your patients don't have to make a decision before they give birth. Moms can change their mind days later after they give birth to say, hey, I actually do want to breastfeed. So the question is, you know, how many days can a woman wait after she's done breastfeeding, or not breastfeeding, after she's done giving birth to make up her mind and say, yep, I actually do want to breastfeed. So we talk about the milk coming in like 3 days later, and it comes in and it's full. But what happens after that if mom changes her mind 2 weeks later and says, you know what, it seems like my baby isn't working well with formula. I'm thinking about breastfeeding. Is that something possible to do? And what's your suggestion on that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The best time to decide to breastfeed, of course, is at birth. You can certainly wait up until that point. Like, there's no reason that you really need to know, like this young woman that I just told about. You don't really need to know until that point. You can decide at that moment. Because once the amount of milk is controlled by supply and demand, the more amount of milk is taken out of the breast, the more milk the mother makes. So it's like birth kind of turns the switch. The milk making switch is turned on. And then after birth, the amount of milk, the amount of suckling that happens at the breast is like turning a dimmer switch. Like the more suckling the baby does at the breast, the dimmer switch is turned up and more milk the mother will make. So the more milk, the more times suckles at the breast in the first few days, that turns the dimmer switch up higher and higher and the mother will make more milk. So ideally, the mother decides to breastfeed in the first few days and that will make more milk. So that would be great. If she decides to breastfeed, and I know there are a significant number of women who do this, who say, well, I don't really want to breastfeed in the first few days because I don't see a lot of milk there. I'm going to start breastfeeding after my breasts fill and there is a lot of milk there. That can definitely happen. It's not ideal, but it can definitely happen, and I know lots of women do that. You can decide to breastfeed further on down the line. I have definitely seen women say that they wanted to formulate feed and it didn't agree with their baby, like you said, Fua, or you know, some other reason they changed their mind, whatever. And it is possible to restart the breasts with breastfeeding. It's called relactation. And it definitely can be done. It often will take about as long to bring the milk back as the amount of time that it was not used. So like, let's say a woman was not breastfeeding for 2 weeks. It can take 2 weeks or a little bit longer to get the milk to come again. And she probably will have to put her baby to the breast a lot and also do a lot of pumping during that time. But it is not something that is impossible by any means.
And so,
So we would, if I had a patient who decided, you know, a month later, postpartum. So Hmong woman would, you know, go on a chicken diet for a whole month. And yep. then after that, they go, actually, I do want to breastfeed. Could we give you a call and say,
yes,
hey, I waited 30 days and I spent a lot of time with my baby and I really want to breastfeed. And I didn't know how. And can I come see you? And yes. my insurance would cover that, right?
Yes, it often depends on who you go to, but for me and for the other lactation consultants that work in the Fairview East region, we are nurse midwives and nurse practitioners, and so those are billed as regular provider visits, and so they would be just be whatever the person's normal copay would be. So yes, those are generally covered by insurance.
Perfect. So as a CHW, I think we should keep in mind that insurance, not a lot of our patients know what their insurance covers and doesn't cover. But referring back to where their hospital, where they gave birth, there's usually some sort of midwife, and they usually work in the role of knowing a provider, knowing a specialist who's a lactation consultant. When you connect with your patients, you want to connect them back to possibly the hospital or the group of providers. Midwives, nurse practitioners, or primary care doctors, or OB/GYN, and ask them about who they go to for lactation consultant. So at any given point, relactation or not, Anne's job is there to support women who are breastfeeding.
And we can answer questions about whether or not it would be covered by insurance. So if they have questions about that, encourage folks to call because we can help with that. Mm-hmm. And Anne Ganey, did you have something?
Yes, we have a question that's the flip side of what you're talking about from Kimberly Barker. She says, many years ago, there was a shot given to stop the production of milk.
Yes.
For those who choose not to breastfeed, is that still available or has that been determined to not be a good idea?
Yes, I remember that shot. That shot was called Parladel. And yes, that used to be given, but it is not given anymore because it was found that it had some serious side effects and that milk just will go on its own if the breast is not emptied and not used. It will dry up on its own within 3 to 4 days. And so the advantages of using it were not enough to justify the risks. So yeah, good question. I remember it too, but we don't do it anymore.
So just like Kimberly Barker, if you all have any burning questions from a CHW's perspective or just, you know, from lived experience, please feel free to put it in the chat. As I am a Hmong woman from one lived experience, one cultural lived experience, and we're having this, Anne and I are having this dialogue, please feel free to ask questions that you feel like that you want answers to, and we'll bring it up. Thanks, Kimberly.
One other thing I wanted to just throw in here quickly before we go on to this breastfeeding and pain business is that if people are concerned about milk supply in the early days and not whether or not they have enough milk, is that formula can interfere with that. So if people are concerned about there's nothing there, I'm totally dry, there's only drops, that's going to be enough for my baby. I had a 9.5-pound baby and he doesn't have enough, you know, he's going to want more. Giving a lot of formula in that early time can interfere with this because it makes the baby less hungry to nurse at the breast. And then if the baby is less hungry to nurse at the breast, they will nurse less at the breast and take less milk out from the breast, which then is going to turn that dimmer switch down and the breast will make less milk. So if the baby, the best thing to do to make sure the baby gets enough milk is to put the baby to the breast frequently so that they take more milk out of the breast and then the breast will make more milk. Those first few days are like the baby putting in their order for lots of milk, and then the breast will make more milk.
Thank you. So yep. Formula feeding with breastfeeding isn't a bad thing. It's just moms need to be aware that Some moms might feel defeated because they did both, and then they're saying baby doesn't want to go to breast anymore. Well, the baby might get used to the flow from regular nipples, correct?
Correct.
And so that really does impede the production of milk. But you know, there are nipples out there now that imitates mom's, you know, like nipples, and the flow is, you know, they try to regulate the flow. What's your position on that? You know, as a CHW, if mom's going, you know, my nipples really hurt, I'm scared to put baby to breast, but I'm willing to pump, would the nipples work? What's your suggestion? Would you still say keep going?
I think that if a mother does want to use both formula and breast milk, she definitely can do that. It's probably best to wait as long as she can before introducing that. But as far as nipples, it's best to use the slowest flow nipple that you can, like a zero flow or a newborn or a preemie, because the milk flows from the breast. The baby controls the milk flow from the breast. Milk doesn't usually come pouring out of the breast, although sometimes in the first couple days it seems like it does. But after that, it doesn't come just pouring out. And when you turn a bottle upside down, milk just kind of drip, 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 drip. So use the slowest flow nipple that you can use.
Okay. So kind of like drinking from a really tiny straw versus just from the cup. And you're like pouring from the cup versus having to work for it.
Right.
And you want the baby to work for it. What I'm hearing is you want babies to suckle at the breast so it could produce more milk. So the suckling is what stimulates more milk. Okay. Thank you.
Right. Okay. So we will move on to this next one, which is about pain, because I find that when speaking with women, pain is a huge concern. I mean, nobody wants pain. And people do hear things about, well, I tried to breastfeed, it was really painful. I want to breastfeed, but I'm worried that it's going to really hurt. Breastfeeding shouldn't hurt. Sometimes in the first few days, for the first couple seconds of putting the baby at the breast, it can be tender, but it should not be excruciatingly painful. You can point out to families that babies don't suck on the nipple like a straw from the breast to get milk. That would hurt. Okay. They use the nipple to find the proper place to latch at the breast, and then they take a big mouthful of breast, like the baby in this picture, to literally milk with their tongue to bring the milk into their mouth. When you can get pain is when the breast is not far enough into the baby's mouth so that the mother's nipple is getting squashed against the roof of the baby's mouth instead of being deeply in so that the mother's nipple is almost back to the baby's throat where it's nice and soft and not getting squished. That's when it causes pain, which is when the nipple is getting squished against the roof of the baby's mouth, meaning it's not far back enough. And that causes pain.
When you talk about nipples, sometimes, right in my mind, I'm like, oh, the nipple's like the pointy stuff that's the pointy mesh. But then the nipple is actually the whole dark area of the breast, right? The areola and everything.
Well, yeah, there's the nipple and the areola is the dark part.
Okay.
And so the nipple itself, the little sticky outy part, mm-hmm. that really, once the baby is suckling well, gets drawn way back almost to the baby's throat, like you can see in this picture here. Mm-hmm. It's not just the nipple in the baby's mouth. The baby has their mouth widely open and has a lot of the mother's breast. Mm-hmm. Some books and things will tell you the baby should take the whole areola into their mouth. Mm-hmm. But once you have looked at a number of breasts or even at your own breast, depending on who you are, many birthing women have very large areolas, and it's just not reasonable to get. I mean, some women have an areola the size of their baby's head. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to all go in there. Mm-hmm. So women don't need to worry that it's not all going to fit, because it's not.
Okay.
But they should take a nice big mouthful, and it shouldn't be painful. And a big takeaway here is that how the mother holds the baby can help the baby grasp the breast well and prevent pain. So, some basic ideas that it kind of gives on this slide here is that some ideas about how the mother can hold the baby. The baby should be tummy to tummy with the parent. The mother wants to present her nipple to the baby's nose, kind of like the baby is sniffing instead of straight into the mouth. So it's like not
when
like,
you, like I don't know about some folks, but you know, when you buy peach, well, when I buy peach, I like to bring the peach to my nose, like not touching the nose, but like to smell the peach.
Yes.
Is that kind of gross to say?
No, it's brilliant. No, I had a peach for breakfast.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not like licking it or putting it into my nose, but like really to get a good scent from a peach to know that it's, you know, not too ripe. You want to be able to smell the ripeness from it while it's still firm in your hand, then you know it's a good peach. So that's one way of I keep thinking about when you say the baby wants to smell mom, to know where milk source is coming from. It's sort of like that. Like you kind of let the baby smell you to say, hey, I'm ready to let you have some milk. So smell my breast. Okay.
Yeah. And it's different than a bottle nipple, because a bottle nipple just goes, you know, generally when we give a baby a bottle, and this isn't exactly the right way to do it, but most of the time most of us are used to just putting the bottle straight into the baby's mouth.
Yeah.
But we present our nipple towards the baby's nose and you wait for the baby to open their mouth like, oh, this is a really good peach. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah.
And they open their mouth really wide. And then you bring the baby in close to the breast.
Yeah.
You don't try to put the baby's, your nipple into the baby's mouth. Okay. Actually, can we go back to that other slide, Anne? Yeah, thanks. Like in this baby in this picture has his or her chin tucked into the mother's breast and their nose out. And this baby isn't really, I would like it if this baby were in a little bit closer to this mom's breast, but this is just to show in the picture. The lips should be kind of out and the nose should be out from the breast and the chin should be tucked in.
There should be a little bit more smushing.
Baby should be a little bit more smushed in. Yeah, I think they're just trying to show us the angle here.
Got it.
Sometimes when the baby gets on the breast, it might hurt for a few seconds while the nipple gets drawn deeply in. I usually tell the mother, take a few deep breaths, like maybe three nice deep breaths, and then if it feels okay, just kind of like tugging, then continue. If it can continue
to help
hurt. Okay. Oh, go ahead.
I was like, if you're going to probably answer it, if it continues to hurt, what should we do to prep ourselves if I was breastfeeding and that was the one thing that I was afraid of? Could I take something for it? Could I, you know, what would I do?
So yeah, if it continues to hurt for the whole feeding and isn't getting better, it's really painful, toes are curling or there's bleeding nipples, something is definitely wrong. Mm-hmm. So things to do. You can, like it says in the on the slide here, the mother can break the suction, stick a finger in the baby's mouth and bring the baby off the breast and try again, because something is not right with the baby's latch. So try again. She can try holding the baby in a different position, which we'll see on the next slide. She should call her clinic to see if she can get a referral to a lactation consultant who can help her. In the intervening time, she can try putting something like coconut oil on her nipples or just the milk. She can take ibuprofen for pain. So she can try some, they will give her some cream in the hospital that she can try putting on her nipples. So she can try some home remedies like that while she is waiting for somebody to look at how her baby is latching on her breast and see if we can improve how that is and get some long-term help. Okay, now we can go to that next one. And this has a lot of small writing on it, which I don't expect you to be able to read right now. But this is a page from the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition prenatal toolkit, which is a wonderful, wonderful tool, which I encourage you all to look at. But I really love, first of all, this has some great steps for helping babies to get comfortably attached and nursing to mother. And I see that here we have moms holding babies in several different positions. So this lady on the left is holding her baby in what we call a cross cradle hold, with the baby kind of up on a pillow, and she's supporting the baby along her back with, and then she's got her hand under the baby's neck and her other hand for her breast. And then we've got the lady on the right is doing what we call a football or a clutch hold. She's holding her baby along her side, again, with supporting her with one hand, and then her other hand for the breast. And then the baby on the bottom is got her baby across her lap and doing what is a traditional cradle hold. So she's got the baby across her lap, and she's got the baby's head kind of tucked into the crook of her arm. So we've got a couple of different positions that you can try there. And we can go to the next slide.
I was just reading some of our questions here.
Yeah, I saw those. Should we try to address those now?
Sure.
Okay.
Helda asked, was it challenging for you as a CHW to form a collaborative team approach with clinicians? I would invite other CHWs on here to share a story if you have one about this. And I can share just a 2-minute quick story. Anne and I were getting to know each other, and we're going, oh, we almost crossed paths. I loved working with the midwives over at Roselawn Clinic when I was a care guide and in the capacity of CHW. So the question asks about is, was it challenging to form collaborative team approach with clinicians? Definitely buy-in from providers. But as a CHW, we're also, if you're new to the field, you're also learning your scope of work. So I really encourage you to build team support from like maybe CMAs or other providers that are not the clinician. I made friends with the front desk and they got to know me really well. And it's really weird because the providers actually trust the front desk people because the front desk people know their patients. So I learned through watching my providers communicate with the front desk about patient A is coming in again, and it's every biweekly, but he has reported to the receptionist about A, B, and C symptoms that were new. And usually the receptionist can't diagnose anything, but they'll take the message and they'll send it back to, you know, my doctor to say, hey, last week, just a reminder to you, they came in for these symptoms as reported on their appointment list. They're coming in this week for these new ones. So just a heads up. So I got to know my receptionists and my CMAs really well in order for me to get buy-in from the doctors. So the short answer is yes and no. It was challenging because we are sort of new as we are CHWs are an extended team member who just reinforces the education from our experts. So in the grand scheme of thing, Anne would be my provider giving me an order, a task to go out and reinforce her the education she had with her patient around breastfeeding and time and goals, right? It was challenging, one, because our providers don't know what our scope of practice is before really working with us and entrusting their patients to us, which is a very normal thing. And then two, it wasn't because once I got to know my scope of practice and the doctors knew what it was that I was good at or what my purpose in the team was, I just had a flood of patients referral to me. And then that's when you're sort of like, okay, now I have to address burnout because I have to, you know, make sure boundaries. But that's a, you know, conversation for another day. But that's just making sure. So my answer is yes and no. And a collaborative team approach, really understanding what education you would reinforce with your patient. So the conversation that Anne and I have been having this morning or this lunch hour was really about, so Anne, when you say it like that, And I asked the question to reinforce that, like, this, is that right? Right. So it's really it's a dialogue about how do you then have a conversation with your private provider so that you're reinforcing the same message. Thanks, Hilda, for asking. And I hope I answered you. Okay. All right. Back to you, Anne.
Okay. So, and this is another slide with a couple of videos listed here. There are some links here, which are wonderful, and I hope you have a chance to come back and look at them. One is from the Global Health Media Organization, and it's a demonstration. It's about a 10-minute video. It's a demonstration of a bunch of different positions. And the Global Health Media website is a really, really great one. And I do encourage you to look at it because it has a bunch of videos on all kinds of things being demonstrated. Breastfeeding, childcare, infant care, all of that. And it also has videos in a wide variety of languages. You can choose from a drop-down. So you can show videos to your clients in English, in Somali, in Hmong, in all kinds of different languages. It's just a fantastic resource. So there's that website is listed there. And there's also a YouTube video listed there that shows some positions for breastfeeding and a reclining position. And I like the two pictures on this slide here too. We show a mother breastfeeding in the side lying position, which can be very comfortable. And also a mother breastfeeding in the laid back position, which I like to show women because it can help, I feel, get babies to help get their mouth nice and widely open, nice and big. So that helps with decreasing pain when you're breastfeeding. And I also really like this position for mothers of other children, because once baby gets well established on the breast, it can be a one-hander. So you can have another arm free to pass out snacks or call for help or whatever you need.
Wave someone down.
Right.
Get that one. He's running away. Yeah.
Other children. So, and it can be done in the, you know, on a recliner or in a bed or whatever. So here we just have a list of kind of the different positions that I talked about. But if a mother is really still having pain that is not getting better, something is not right. It's not normal for pain to continue. Then she needs to find some help that will really make a difference. So that's my main takeaway. If the mother is still having pain, then something isn't right.
As a CHW, if mom is saying, I can't tell if the mom's pain is normal or not, if I'm doing a home visiting, a lot of the conversation I have with patients, I usually bring it right back to the doctors. I CC mm-hmm. them on my Epic note and say, hey, FYI, this is how the visit went today. And if how would you like for us to do like a preliminary assessment? Although we're not licensed healthcare providers, you would want more information in order for you to be able to assess to say, hey, how about try coconut oil and try spacing the feeding? Seems like baby's latching really well. Try spacing, whatever recommendation you would make. I wouldn't make that recommendation, but right. What would you like for me to more collect kind of data from the patient, so mm-hmm. then you're able to answer that? Or would you rather me just go ahead and refer them to you and say, hey, I'm going to connect you to Anne, and she's going to have her office is going to schedule you to see her. So how would you like for me to do that assessment, if there's any?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to know if the mother's having bleeding or not, if her nipples are open or bleeding or blistered, or if you can see anything. Mm-hmm. You know, if, because sometimes women come in and they say, oh, my nipples were nearly chewed off. It was just terrible. And I think, oh dear, I hope that's awful. You know?
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to feel like they, you know, have to continue like that.
That's terrible. That's not normal, right?
No, like, no. Like, that's okay. No.
Okay. All right. All these stuff, not normal. Sores on your nipple.
No.
Okay.
Bleeding. No. Shouldn't be bleeding. Things like that. Okay. Not normal at all. And sometimes mothers will say, well, you know, they were bleeding and cracked and it was terrible, but I guess I just got used to it and they toughened up. No. You're not supposed to just toughen up. As mothers, we have to take enough. You're not just supposed to toughen up with this. So I would say, yeah, if the mother allows you to look at them, that would be nice to know. Do they look okay? And does she say that it hurts for the entire feeding? Or is it just in the first few seconds? Those are things I think would be good to know.
So we asked two main points of question to CHWs. Does it look okay to mom? And if mom wants to show us, we could just write our observation down to say, the nipple is this and this. And then the question two is always about pain, discomfort. Mm-hmm. From a scale of 0 to 10, when you breastfeed, what number would you say it was, you know, the last time you breastfed and the time before that? And so really asking your patients about discomfort really helps the provider understand if this is something urgent or just a follow-up appointment.
Right.
Okay.
And did you see the question about, here's a question, will you be talking at all about babies with physical anomalies that make it difficult to latch?
I didn't have that on there, but I could. Did the questioner have a specific one in mind, like a cleft lip or palate or something like that?
They didn't ask that in the question itself.
Because there are, I mean, if she responds, then let me know. But, or if I'm, I guess I can see it. There are some, like a cleft lip or a cleft palate can make it difficult to latch. A cleft lip is when there's a space in the lip, or a cleft palate is where there's a space inside the mouth that doesn't close properly. Those can both make latching challenging. We have had a few families that have had children who've had that lately, who've told me that they have had, and I got all super prepared to help these families. They told me they got excellent assistance from the people at Gillette who were helping their babies, such that I got super prepared and they were like, yeah, we don't need you. So, oh, that is what you're talking about? Let me see if I can see Kimberly's entire, if you are talking about my question, that's what I'm talking about. Oh, okay, thank you. Okay. So actually these two families that I got prepared to assist did not even really need me, because they said they got excellent help from Gillette, who were the people, you know, assisting them with their babies. With cleft lip, sometimes that can be managed with breastfeeding because the breast is soft, unlike a bottle. And so it can actually fill in the gap because it is squishy. Mm-hmm. Cleft palate can be harder because cleft palate has an opening between the inside of the mouth and the nose, actually, and the sinuses. And so there can be danger of milk going in between there. So that's harder. Sometimes children with things like Down syndrome can be hard to nurse because they are, they're very floppy. And so their head tends to like drop back, and it can, sometimes you have to hold the breast a little bit differently or support the baby a little bit differently. They can definitely nurse, but sometimes it adds some extra challenge because they tend to be a little bit, their muscles are more floppy and they are, it's a little harder for them to stay latched to the breast. But there are definitely special cases. And so if you have someone like that, you can definitely refer them to a lactation consultant who, if they cannot help you themselves, can probably find the appropriate person. So breastfeeding can definitely be done, or at least partially done, in some special cases like that.
I had friends who had talked about their baby's tongue had to get cut underneath.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so how would you recommend breastfeeding for babies who needed that procedure, or is it needed to breastfeed?
Yeah. So yeah, I see there's a question here from Hakima about that. Mm-hmm. That is like all over the place right now. Lots of people have concerns about that, about tongue tie and breastfeeding and lip tie and breastfeeding. And I've gone to some educational offerings on that. There can be difficulty with that if the baby has the little, my little milk ball is rolling away. If the baby has a very tight attachment from the end of its tongue, the very tip of its tongue, mm-hmm. to the bottom of its, the floor of the mouth. So such that the tip of the tongue is attached to the floor of the mouth, and it makes it difficult for the baby to stick their tongue out. Mm-hmm. Because if the baby has a hard time sticking their tongue out, it makes it hard for them to use their tongue to milk the breast and bring the milk from the breast, and it can cause nipple pain for the mother because the baby's tongue isn't stroking the mother's breast in the proper way. So to answer that question, that can affect latching and be a difficulty. We do assess for that in the hospital. And sometimes the pediatrician will snip that in the hospital if it's very tight. If the mother has concerns about that, we do have at some of our hospitals, the ones that I work at, we have a tool that we use to assess for that, an assessment tool that we go over with the parents that we use to check for tongue tie and how it's affecting the baby's tongue movement. Sometimes it affects breastfeeding and sometimes it doesn't. So it's not an always thing. So, and there is some regarding the lip. Most babies do have an attachment between the lip and the top gum. Mm-hmm. Current research tells us that that probably does not have a big effect on breastfeeding.
Okay. So when we were earlier, we talked about if the mom's nipple doesn't look normal, then call the provider, call your lactation consultant. At the same time, I also want us in CHFs to encourage mom that's not mom's fault if her nipple doesn't look right. It could be because baby has something else going on and the baby needs to be checked out as well. And so the lactation consultant, would you say that would be able to take a look at mom and baby to say, you know, you may want to look at baby's tongue and the movement, and did the doctors talk to you about him or her having tongue tie or something like that?
Yes, absolutely. We check both mother and baby.
Okay.
Okay, right. We can move to the next slide. And then another big concern for folks is about keeping up their milk supply and making sure that they continue to have enough milk. The main things to do to help mothers to continue to have enough milk is to nurse their baby frequently and keep the baby close to them. This is what tells the breast to make more milk. And like I said before, formula can interfere with this because it makes the baby full and keeps the baby from breastfeeding as often as they need to. It turns down that dimmer switch. The mother's milk supply will grow to meet the baby's needs if the baby is well attached and feeds as often as they need to. It is normal for the baby to lose weight in the first couple days. You know how women retain a lot of fluid when they're pregnant? Mm-hmm. Babies retain fluid during the pregnancy too. And in the first couple days, they pee that out just like mothers do. So it's normal for the babies to lose weight in the first couple days, and it doesn't mean that anything is going wrong. So we can go to the next one. There we go. Things to look for, and they will tell mothers this in the hospital, how to know when baby needs to eat. Things to look for, hunger cues, things like baby opening their mouth and trying to eat on their fists, turning towards mother when she's holding her, turning towards father, turning towards any random family member and trying to nurse on their arm or on their chest or their cheek or whatever. These are signs the baby wants some food.
So crying. Not necessarily crying. Oh yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, they do cry, but that's late. They cry when they're getting desperate, when they're like, has nobody seen me trying to eat my knuckles and my mother's elbow? And, you know, if no one has seen this now, I must cry. So there are other signs, but crying definitely is. Crying can also mean other things. Crying can mean I'm cold. Crying can mean I want somebody to hold me. It can mean I'm sad and lonely because I was in the womb 2 days ago and now it's bright and it's cold and there's many people and I don't know what to do with myself. So it can mean lots of things. But the main thing is to feed the baby as much as they want to eat, that you don't need to give extra formula bottles unless there's really some kind of issue with how much the baby is gaining weight, mm-hmm. but just feed the baby as much as they want to eat and keep that dimmer switch turned up because the body knows how much milk to make. It's rare that a woman is not able to make enough milk. That's not common.
your assessment. So as a CHW, if the woman says, the patient says, you know, I'm not feeding my baby extra or anything like that. And it just seems like I'm only putting baby to breast every 3 hours as scheduled. It seems like the baby's never getting enough. I feel like the baby's never getting enough. What would be some questions that you may want the CHW to ask or assess, so then we can get this message back to you and you would know how would we facilitate that, I guess, again?
Mm-hmm. I guess I do hear women say this very frequently, and I would ask them, what makes them feel like the baby isn't getting enough?
Okay.
Because there are lots of things that make people feel like the baby isn't getting enough. Mm-hmm. Like I said, like they're crying, or and also it's important to know that it can be normal for babies want to eat more than every 3 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, babies want to eat oftentimes 8 to 12 times in a day, but that isn't necessarily evenly spaced. You know, we think, okay, eight times in a day, that's every 3 hours. And then lo and behold, it's like 1 hour has passed and the baby is wanting to eat. Well, maybe they eat, sometimes it's 4 hours, and then there's a clump of time, usually in the evening when you want to make dinner and all of the other children are crabby, that they want to eat every hour. Mm-hmm. And that's normal. Sometimes they do that. And it's okay to respond to that. So I usually ask mothers, what makes you think he wants to eat? He's not getting enough. Mm-hmm. And actually, we can move to the next slide, because that answers some of that. How do I know baby's getting enough milk? And there are some good, I think, takeaways here. The things that we look for to know that baby is getting enough is that babies should, like I said, normal for them to lose weight in the first couple days. Babies should regain their birth weight by 10 days to 2 weeks. And then after that, they gain about an ounce a day for the first several months. And so that's something that we're looking for. And most babies will have a visit to their care provider sometime in that first few weeks. Mm-hmm. They should have a good number of wet and dirty diapers. They should stop having that first wet, sticky black poop that they have when they're first born. That should be done by the time they're about 4 days old. And they should be having about 3 to 5 yellow, seedy, loose poops every day, and about as many wet diapers as they are days old during that first week.
We talk and about then, poop a lot, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so much poop. So much poop.
And it's okay as CHWs talk about poop.
Absolutely okay to talk about poop. Just like old people talk about poop all the time, you know, babies also very much about the poop.
Like it.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, lots of poop shows us that the baby's getting enough food. And they should have about as many wet diapers as they are days old. So after they're like 6 days old, about 6 to 8 wet diapers a day, and lots of seedy, loose poop. Babies don't really have diarrhea when they're tiny newborns. Some people might feel like it looks like diarrhea, but it's just, that's normal breastfed poop. So that's really the takeaway here. Baby is getting enough milk if they're gaining weight and if they're having good number of wet and poopy diapers.
When would be a cause for concern? Should, like, I went a day and my baby didn't have a poopy diaper, but he's been peeing all day and he's 2 weeks old. Would that, I guess there's just some parameters. Some people like me take it literally, so I will count all the poopy diapers and all.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'll do my own gold star. Mom, you did great.
Right.
You know.
Yes.
And yes. Which is, you know, to each his own. My own. But
yes.
What would you say are concerns you have to call your baby's doctor right away, or your doctor right away?
I would say in the first week, if baby doesn't poop in a day, then you should call the doctor in the first week.
Okay.
After that, after the first few weeks, some babies don't poop as often. Okay. Like even after a month, some babies maybe only poop once a day. And that's just kind of what turns out to be their normal.
Okay.
or if baby is not having two or three wet diapers in a day, then I think you should call. Also important to know, this isn't really breastfeeding related, but in general, if babies who are less than 3 months have a fever, you should call.
Thank you. I think referencing the discharge paper from the hospital is really important. Even though the discharge paperwork that I remembered, I haven't had a baby for like 6 years, so I don't have the current up-to-date discharge paperwork, but it recommends that. And I just want to reinforce that, make sure you ask your patients, if you're a CHW, if you're doing home visiting, or even when they come in the office, if they still have the discharge paperwork, and so that you can go through the discharge paperwork with them. And then I would even ask during follow-up if their baby is having any of those, any of the risks to watch out for from the discharge paperwork.
Good. We can move on, I think. Oh, this is just a quickie. If for some reason the baby is not getting enough, the best thing to supplement with is mother's milk rather than formula. And she can get that by pumping if she needs to. And we can move on because I want to get to hear Fua talk a little bit.
I feel like I've been talking all this time too.
No, I know, but I want you to get your slides.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, this is a good time to, as we're going towards the CHW way, I think Kimberly asked another question about public health or Kimberly Hall said, sorry, you asked, do you refer to public health or baby cafes? I think this is about our conversation when I was talking about make sure you call your lactation consultant or your provider about anything strange. What would you recommend, Anne, about referring to public health or baby cafes?
I definitely do that. I'm going to be excited for the time when the baby cafes resume in person, but I keep the numbers of the Ramsey County Public Health and the baby cafes and pass them out to people regularly. And we definitely refer people to public health. So yeah, we love all of that. So yes, thumbs up for sure.
I think those are really great resources. Public health, which is they operate through the WIC clinic, lactation consultants. I also try to keep my provider, so either my primary care provider, up to date with some questions that I may have for my baby or myself when it comes to breastfeeding. I usually make it a point to ask one question about breastfeeding at my child's, my newborn's visit. And then when I have my own follow-up with my midwife or my OB provider. So lots of different ways, but you can still access your provider and your baby's provider. All right. So the role of a community health worker, building individual capacity. We talk a lot about knowing what the normal is, because then we would know how to, if it's anything different from the normal, we can help our patients process through what they think is normal, not necessarily what is not normal, right? In my culture, Anne had referenced this earlier about maybe waiting 3 days until your milk comes in to feed baby. So the Hmong used to just feed rice porridge to the baby, a little bit of soup here and there, like a spoonful of, we call it guan cai, meaning it's like the starch water of the rice. So you rinse the rice out and you boil the water. And then so it's got calories in it. It's just not good for the baby, to be honest, first few days. And then we would wait 3 days and then the mother's milk comes in and then we would encourage breastfeeding. When I talk about this, it's usually way back home in Laos. Now, a lot of mother-in-laws especially discourage their daughter-in-laws or even their daughters to breastfeed because of the inaccessibility to mom when mom's at work and we have to put the baby to breast a lot. So those are some challenges that you may face is, you know, the support system of the mom might discourage breastfeeding. And I think it would always work in your benefit as a CHW to give Anne a call, or MBC, you know, Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition, a call and say, hey, what are some tips around, you know, making sure that they can schedule feed breastfeed, or if you as a CHW have any questions around, you know, supporting a mom who is trying to breastfeed, but don't know how because of the support system. What we seek out as CHWs, I don't know if this is your technique. My technique is, I don't really know what isn't not normal versus normal, but what is normal today and educated us on. Families might have other normals as well, like my mother-in-law feeding rice porridge to my sons. At the same time, make sure that if the mom is worried about anything, that you as a CHW know how to connect mom, and that's the reinforcement of provider relationship. This works into prevention work as well. Remembering that we talked about some resources around scaling, you know, how do you feel today on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being great, 1 being not bad, or bad, however you want. I don't like to be negative, so I usually say it's not going good. So using these kind of scales to really help your mothers understand where this discomfort level is. And so the hospital used the pain level scale. And so asking your moms about discomfort on that same pain scale would be consistent if you were to report back any of your findings to the doctor. Usually as we get dispatched out as community health workers, we're reporting back to a nurse practitioner, a midwife, an OB, a primary care doctor, someone who is giving us, you know, a task of education to reinforce. So that's why I asked a lot from Anne about what would you want us to assess? What more would you want to know before having the patient come in to see you in the clinic so that you know how to give direction? As a CHW, we would like to reinforce with mom that she's doing a good job. So responsive feeding through understanding baby cues. As long as you know that when mom's reporting to you how she's articulating how she knows when baby is getting enough or not enough, that is something to document and to reinforce with mom on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, what is enough, right? If mom's not feeling like baby's getting enough, then again, build that rapport relationship with your lactation consultant, get to know who the care providers are and your patient's team. All right. I think moving forward, as community health workers, we work in the prevention realm, and we don't usually have an agenda, but we know that certain things work, certain best practices. And so what this education really is to help us empower mothers who are breastfeeding or who are thinking about it or who don't know about it. But we're also empowering mothers that their decisions, however decisions they have, there are resources available to them. So I want you all to hear that we our agenda isn't to turn over believers into breastfeeding people. Our agenda is you have a resource. It's MBC. It's Anne, the lactation consultant. And if our mothers are having questions about breastfeeding or feeding in general, we have folks to turn to. So thank you. All right. No questions. Okay. All right. So building self-efficacy and a continuation of that. Anne and I, we were talking about making sure that at CHWs, we teach our moms how to prepare to report off to their provider, or if they had questions about breastfeeding or questions about pain. If we're not the ones as CHWs calling in these concerns, then what questions should our patients ask the providers? And so the questions I've been asking Anne today are questions that you could help moms prepare for when they go in to see their doctor, or if they're having discomfort, or if their nipple didn't look normal, then those are the questions that you would try to offer mom. So when she calls in to Anne and say, hey, Anne's office, my nipple looks like this, and not just say, I am having pain in my breast, but the pain is coming from my nipple and it's bleeding and I don't want to put the baby to breast. So I'm really helping our moms and our patients prepare their questions and answers to the providers. So that would help with the flow, and it would get the client to where, or the patient to where they want and feel like they're heard. So really preparing our patients for that. I think I wanted to just put in a plug that primary care for moms is very important. It's also very important for babies. And so to continue that relationship in breastfeeding, and I guess my question for you is, how long can mom breastfeed for? I know there's a choice where if moms choose to stop breastfeeding, they could stop whenever. Mm-hmm. But how long can they breastfeed for so that they know what the timeline is? Well,
a woman can breastfeed as long as she wants to. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends breastfeeding for at least a year, because a baby can't have cow's milk until they're a year old. The World Health Organization says until 2 years or until mutually desired. The worldwide age of weaning from breastfeeding is 4. Mm-hmm. So really, a woman and baby can decide how long they want to breastfeed. Some women breastfeed for 3 months. Some women breastfeed for 3 years. It's breast milk alone should be a baby's sole nutrition for 6 months, until the time that you start into adding other solid food. And they shouldn't have cow's milk until a year. But after that, it's up to mother and baby. And when she decides to wean, or baby decides to wean, it should be done gradually so that so that mother's breasts don't get uncomfortably full. But it's really can be up to the mom and the baby or the child.
That's really good to hear. Just from working with women who are working moms, they also are worried that they take 12 weeks. Well, most of them take only 6 weeks off work.
Yep.
So they are worried that when they breastfeed for 6 weeks, then what's the baby going to, you know, eat after that? So they would rather just start formula and end mm-hmm. it with that. But so my point was, the lactation consultant can help you. You can help us come up with a plan as a patient to say, when are you planning to return back to work? So therefore, this is how long, you know, breastfeeding can go for. And this mm-hmm. is a plan where you have to start thinking about either pumping or weaning off and starting formula. Would that be fair for a CHW to connect with you about?
Absolutely. And if women want to continue to breastfeed when they return to work at 6 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever, we can talk about how to do that. We can talk about pumping. If a woman says, you know, I don't want to do that, I prefer to wean to formula at that time, that's fine. We can talk about doing that too. And then I encourage women that any breastfeeding is better than no breastfeeding. That's how powerful breast milk is. So to say, well, I don't think I'm going to breastfeed because I need to go back to work at 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. I say, so do it for 6 weeks. That's okay. If you weaned formula at 6 weeks because it would just be too difficult in whatever your work situation is, that's okay. That 6 weeks is better than 0 weeks. And then we can talk about how to move to formula when the time comes to do that.
Thank you. And so a CHW world, we work in this spectrum of gray, and we're swimming in gray a lot, but it's good to know the goalposts as well. Mm-hmm. So what I heard today was you get your baby sole nutrition source would be breast milk for 6 months if you were breastfeeding.
Correct.
Or even formula feeding.
And correct,
when you start
yes.
to introduce solid foods, then that's when you get to decide for the baby gets to also decide how much solid I'm going to eat and how much milk I'm going to eat so that I have enough nutrition, enough calories. Okay.
Yes.
That's good.
Right.
So 6 months is my, is a key yes. in my mind.
Yes. Yes. Okay. 6 months is milk only.
Okay. All right. That's it for my part. And I know we're about 4 minutes to time here. I don't know if Linda or Aunt Gainey wanted to say anything, or Aunt Oswood, if you had any last words. I'm just going to open it up to the floor here. If any of our CHWs or community members have a question for any of us, feel free to ask away.
Yes, we do have a few minutes for questions.
We could just throw up that last, we have like two slides just so people know that they're there. They can refer to them later that have some resources on them. Oh, that's just, yeah, that's the, this is tiny words. You can look at it later, but just has some websites and things, some good info that you could refer to. And then the last one is a little sample. A little sample diaper diary, and people could write down when baby's feeding and things like that, and a little poop chart so people can think about poop.
Great takeaways.
Yeah. And if anybody has anything else they would like to add, stories to tell, questions, we're open for that.
And hearing none and knowing that we are at 1:30, and
okay,
when we want to be respectful of your time. Oh, maybe there are some questions here. I will just look at the chat before. Nope, it's thank yous. Yes.
Oh, good.
I want to say thank you to Anne and to Fua for such a great presentation on a topic that it's likely every one of you will encounter at some point in your career. And thank you to Linda Kopecky and the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition for making this opportunity possible. And to all of you for being here and asking such great questions today. Please return for our other workshops. You'll get notified about them. The dates aren't set, but one will be on more how-tos and how to help moms overcome difficulties. And one will be that question that Fuku was asking, what happens when you go back to work or school? So those are coming up.
Big one.
And let other people know about this workshop. It will be posted on our websites, so it's available to others. And that's all for now. Thanks to everyone. Stay healthy, take care, and stay safe, and enjoy summer.
Great. Thank you very much.